Welcome back to the Age of Sigmar podcast for the wide world of wargaming. Again, this is Alex, your host, with my co-hosts Garrett, Matthew, and Jeremy. John is out this evening, but he's enjoying a great date night with his wife. How's everyone doing tonight? Garrett, what's on your workbench?
Well, I'm sitting here with a glass of cranberry juice, enjoying a night not busy setting up my new house. I just got my basement set up and my models unpacked, and so I can now start working on things. Got to finish up some Black Knights before my event in the end of May, so I got plenty of time. But yeah, that's all I got going. Matthew, what are you working on tonight?
Yeah, I am painting some Daughters of Cain currently. I am drinking some Corona.
Okay, Mr. Bates.
I am sitting in a super comfortable rocking chair. This is why I'm speaking in a weird rhythm, because I'm going back and forth like this. I am working on a Daughters of Cain commission. Kind of took a weird sidetrack for one day to just bust out some of these models real fast, and then I'll jump back into the other things that I need to be painting. And just kind of enjoying some quiet time right now while we record. Jeremy, what are you up to, man?
I'm enjoying a fine vintage of NyQuil because I'm recuperating from Wet Coast GT, where apparently traveling in Canadian air does not sit well with myself. I was going to say, I hope you're making some improvements on that Skaven army that Cal needs to take to the Riptide GT coming up in 2 weeks in Bremerton, Washington.
Yeah, I'll have all 120 models done real quick. No worries.
Okay, yeah. Good. I just wanted to make sure. You know, maybe we should make him take the 160 Plague Monk list instead. I'm super excited to come back home because, as we'll talk about later in the show, the Fire Slayer book came dropped, and I got like 20 Urgard Berserkers to paint, and I got a Magmic Battleforge to paint. I got some characters to paint. I got some speakers to buy so that my Magmic Battleforge can play some kick-ass music while it's on the battlefield. It's going to be amazing. I'm looking forward to it a lot. And I'm so glad I painted 60 Volkite Berserkers. I will never see the table again, but that's cool, I guess. And how about you, Alex? What's on your workbench?
Oh, man. Well, I'm drinking a nice iced coffee right now, and I have nothing necessarily on my workbench. We're just enjoying another Monday evening. Now,
without John, it's weird. Like, Matt's the only one drinking a Corona, and
we're all being a bunch of losers.
Yeah. And I didn't give a very good rundown either. I feel like I should have tried to fill the void of John for describing my alcohol. It's a vintage year Corona, has kind of a limey taste. It is very cheap. The aftertaste has hints of oak and
beer. But how does it make you feel, really, beer. Matthew?
Where's that Corona from? Is it from small town? where are Coronas from?
Yeah, a small valley in California. No, I don't know. It's then from Albertsons. Yeah.
Vintage Albertsons. Okay, perfect. Well, tonight we do have quite a bit on our plate for our listeners tonight. We'll be talking about the Wet Coast GT that Jeremy mentioned earlier. That was in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. There was a GT for Age of Sigmar as well as 40K, but we'll be reviewing the Age of Sigmar portion of things. We'll also be taking a look at another thing that's near and dear to Jeremy's heart. And that's going to be the Fire Slayers Battle Tome. Not necessarily a Battle Tome review, but we're going to talk a little bit about some of the competitive play and the changes that might have come about with this new book. Now, Wet Coast GT, it's a fun event. I was there a few years ago with Jeremy, but I believe only about 12 people showed up, so it wasn't really a GT at all. Jeremy did pretty well. He got fourth place at the event itself, and it looks like there was some stiff competition. Jeremy, how was the event?
The event was, firstly, the attendance was up, really up. It was 34 players that showed up. I'm sorry, 38 players that showed up and played. We were two from an actual major status for it, which was really cool. the TO, Andy, did a great job running the show. There was a little bit of, well, maybe it's just mostly confusion on my part about how some of the things were scored, because it was not a typical like kind of event. There was no Realmscape used, there was no Realm spells allowed, and there was no Mysterious Terrain used, which is a bit like different from what I'm used to from, you know, most of the events recently since we switched to AOS 2.0. But overall, the missions were like perfectly fine. He picked some really good ones. He had some secondary objectives, which were not like the hidden agenda ones. It was kind of like his own writing, which only really mattered for like basically tiebreakers and placing. He did not do tiebreakers by strength for schedule or what how much you destroyed of your opponents through the event. He did it through these secondary objectives, which was a very different way than most of the events I've played. So that was cool and unique. I'll give you an example of one of them. One of them was basically for every 5 wounds you've caused to enemy heroes, you get 1 VP up to maximum 3 VP. So all of them are max of 3 VP, but they all kind of like fit that criteria where you have to achieve something secondary to the mission. And you don't get to pick them on like an agenda. They're just basically every mission had a preset like secondary objective. The one thing I have to say, though, from one of my highlights, I got to play Dispossessed Dan, international AOS celebrity, I guess, from my last round. And that was a total blast. Really, really funny guy. Dan is Australian, and every time he speaks, I just couldn't stop picturing the guy doing the Aussie Man reviews. If you're introduced with these videos, so I couldn't stop laughing the entire time we were playing, because it just literally sounded like that. He was just casting the game with the Aussie Man like voice, basically. It was tons of fun. But in details, I ended up playing, you know, 5 great opponents. I played my first round in total French, because I played a Quebecois player, played 3 people. And if our audience doesn't know by now, I'm French. So I got to play the entire game in French, which was, you know, awesome. I've never done that before. That was kind of a lot of legwork. And in second round, I actually played Grisogor, if he's flesh your court player, who was literally like, you know, basically giving me, you know, reopening some orifices in my body wider, but he didn't play in a mission, and that cost him the game. Basically, it was the knife to the heart mission, where, you know, if you have both objectives on top of turn, in turn 3 on your turn, you win the game. And I just basically got initiative on turn 3, got to teleport like some of my units on his objective, which he for some reason decided to leave undefended, and I still had more models on mine than he got to it, so I won the game. It was a very low scoring point game. He only killed like 100. He killed 1 character, which was 140 points, and then I killed 500 points of his army, and won the game. But honestly, if I lost the initiative, you would probably just, I think that the game would have been over at that point, because I couldn't seem to get Soul Cage off to prevent his general from, you know, striking first every turn. I was, you know, really prepared for you know, +1 to cast and everything, really prepared for that thing to go off and just negate, you know, this negate Sadrak and just, you know, hit him really hard and probably kill him with all the revenants. But anyway, third round opponent, that's my one loss for the weekend, playing against a clan scryer list on a Duality of Death. He brought a very storm fiend heavy list. It was 12 storm fiends, so a unit of 6 and 2 units of 3, and then 2 warp lightning cannon, 1 arch warlock, and then a vermin lord warp seer. With I guess like a combo even myself I've never looked at before, but the Vermin Lord Warps, you had the basically this this relic that would give him an additional 5 up shrug, which was just amazing on that model, because if you don't already know, this is a monster character that has basically I think 14 wounds, a 4 up save with the ability to reroll all of his saves. And including, you know, successful ones, if that's, you know, interesting to you, apparently. And on top of that, he has a natural 5-up shrug. So in combination with that 5-up shrug, the 5-up shrug from the relic, he effectively had 4 saves to every wound I was causing, unless it was a mortal wound. Or a negative 3 rend rune. And since the mission was focal points, or sorry, Duality of Death, he managed to, on turn one, land the Vermin Lord on one of the objective by himself, like very unsupported. And forcing my hand to basically trying to have to deal with this Vermin Lord, because if I can't kill him, I will effectively lose the game. And I didn't. I put more than 150 52, I think we did the count, it was like around 152 wounds to that thing, and it did not die over the period of the five rounds. And that cost me basically the game, effectively. It didn't matter that he was wiping me off with the Storm Fiends and whatever, because I was kind of just ignoring them as I was trying to just kill this Vermin Lord. Yeah, because having a four consecutive five-up rolls to ignore damage on my basically single damage army was not very effective. And then I end up playing on day two a Sylvaneth player with this unique, I've never seen it play, but like it was an Alpha Strike Sylvaneth list. And unfortunately, since I Marend, his Alpha Strike didn't really trigger very well, and then he lost the game. He called it quits on turn three, I think. His list was brutal. He basically skyrockets Drow through into your line and some Kurnoff Hunters and then a Tree Lord Ancient, and they're both like stacked up with like basically durability relics, and they're just like, if you don't have any ability to like, you know, if you don't ignore Ren, like Durthu is gonna do work, like a lot of work on any block of infantry hits. And last game I played against this Possessed Tan, and that was a really fun game, but unfortunately this Possessed Dwarves against Nighthaunt is not a good matchup. Once again, it's an army that's based off Ren mechanics, and I ignore Nighthaunt, ignore Ren, and I have double their movement speed of the ability to teleport and just played in a mission. And he unfortunately that did not work out very well. I think we played a full five turns, but he lost his entire army by the bottom of turn five. Turns out, in basic dispossess dwarves, that were effectively the Ironbreakers with reroll saves and ignoring Ren values of -1, are pretty durable, even against Nighthaunt units. It did take a lot of work to kill them. So that was my experience at Weko's GT. I was going to say the attendance was, like I said, 38 people. There was a list of all variants kind. There was very heavy Skaven presence, it felt like, at the event. The person who won was Matt Beasley. He brought a Disciples of Tzeentch list, a very non-typical Disciples of Tzeentch list, I would say, in the meta. But in considering the mission design and some of his opponents, Matt is a very good player, because of some of his opponents, like his list just performed well to the missions. I think at one point, like, we had a Gorfist player who made it all the way to the top table against Matthew, and Gorfist is, really does not want to look at the other end of Tzeentch's, like, you know, a Tzeentch list, because they're going to be blockaded by chaff, and then they're going to take, 60 mortal wounds back, and then that's just not, like, that ruins the entire reason of why you want to bring Gorfist. And the second place we had, I believe, the 100...
Jeremy, I'm so sorry. We're going to have to interject here. Let's talk about that list. Let's talk about list number one here to break the tide. Now, Garrett, what were your thoughts on the first place list? The big, big winner, chicken dinner, Matt. If you look at his list, it is definitely a Disciples list, which is not too common nowadays. But what were your thoughts on it?
Well, first, I just want to put comment on the attendance of the event. As Jeremy pointed out, I love that, from 1 year ago, there was 12 people, and then 1 year's time, they go to almost 40. I think that just goes to show the popularity of Age of Sigmar right now. And so I really like seeing that with like events selling out. I've been saying that a lot. And so just wanted to mention that. Regarding his list, I've seen lists like this before in my area, particularly the Kairos Fate Weaver with Fold Reality and 9 Zangor Enlightened. It's a pretty great combo because 9 Enlightened are fairly hard to chew through in one turn. So you're going to you're not going to be able to kill all of them at once. I mean, unless you have a fairly high damage output. And then the Tzeentch player just goes, okay, I'll cast Fold Reality, and they don't have to really fear rolling a one, so they can just cast it every turn, because if they roll a one, the first time they roll it, they'll just Fate Weaver it to a six, and then they just get their guys. So it's like, you'll kill like three or four dudes, and then they'll just bring back like two to five dudes, and so they're just constantly having this giant, very deadly unit of Zangor Enlightened that are of constant presence on the board. So I think that helped a lot. Then the Acolytes, I mean, he's with the Witchfire Coven, he's able to shoot in the hero phase in addition to shooting in the shooting phase. So it's has a lot of potential shooting and nice, easy, cheap chaff. So, I mean, I could see where it can perform well. It does not look like a typical GT winning list, as Jeremy said, but it does have a lot of potential, I think, and in the right hands can go far, which apparently Matt Beasley is a very competent player. Matthew, what are your thoughts on this list and the rest of the event?
I just want to open with, first of all, I believe this is like the second or third time on this show we have talked about a Gorefist playing on top tables, which is so weird because according to Jeremy and Alex, that army's bad.
Okay, you know,
no, it's very, it's a swingy list. Super swingy. It's not that it's bad. Yeah, it's swingy. Like you can, if you get the double turn, you can do well.
I was going to say, come back to me when it wins an event, and then we'll talk.
You come back to me when you win an event.
We'll see in 2 weeks, Matthew.
I'll come back to you when I win an event.
Oh, man. This is getting real.
Yeah, no, I think Garrett covered it pretty well. I mean, the Zinch list that won is... It's really strange. It's kind of weird because it seems like it would fold to like a fold pretty hard to like a heavy alpha strike list. I mean, anything like Daughters of Cain, Deepkin that could hit it pretty hard in the face. The entire army is 50 Kerrick acolytes and then 9 Zangor enlightened and some characters. So if you just take all the Kerrick acolytes off the table, that's 80% of the army just gone. So I don't know. It seems weird. Maybe the matchups favored him. I'm not sure. And like Jeremy says he's a really good player. So maybe he just outplayed his opponents. But yeah, it was kind of a strange list on paper to me, at least for what my opinion's worth, which is not much. It doesn't seem like a very good army. So, I mean, props to him for winning a 5-round GT with it. Cause I personally don't exactly see how it wins many games, but good job, man. You beat 5 people at a GT with it, so
yeah, right, yeah. Right.
Apparently, you know something. I mean, 5 people in a
row as well,
yeah.
And it's yeah, so he's able to like beat like the round. His round 4 opponent was 4-0, so it's not like he was like beating people who weren't also performing well. Like he did beat people who were constantly winning their games. So
now it's also important to note that Disciples of Zinch also got went right behind Jeremy and got 5th place. We have a Devin Trumel also, and his disciple list is definitely different. It had a Gaunt Summoner still. It had Archeon. A smaller block of Kyrick Acolytes. It's a 20 man unit, and of course 20 Zangors. Had less use of endless spells. Just had the Cogs and the Pendulum, but still, two disciples in the top 10. It's like it's 2018 or 2017 all over again.
Well, one of the things I should probably point out is a lot of players are doing this. Maybe it's a local trick they pick up in the area over there, but they've been using the spectral spell portal with the pendulum to basically teleport the pendulum through the portals back and forth. So what they basically do is like if you get locked up in a mix and they deploy the portals on top of multiple units and they just keep casting the pendulum through the portals, it basically keeps hitting the same 2 units over and over and over, or the same units over and over and over. So that's how they've been using that like little gimmicky like trick with the sub portals and the pendulum. It's just it's pretty cool. I thought it was unique and interesting. That's one way to get the maximum value out of that pendulum.
I do believe they did infinitely teleport it through.
They were doing it once, but it's a pretty cool combo. It forces your opponent to like have to retreat, like
okay, at a certain, yeah,
like you don't want to get if you don't want to get hit multiple times by the thing over periods of turns, like you kind of forces you to retreat, especially if you can't push through the combat.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. So we can take a closer look then at the second place list. I actually love this, and it's a damn shame John's not here to enjoy it, but because he is our resident Skaven player, and he's known very well for Pestilence. And this list is hilarious. It unfortunately isn't available on Best Coast Pairings, but you know, Alex L did have a Skaventide list that was a Vermintide Warp Seer. Was this the one that you did play, Jeremy?
No, I played the other one below him.
Okay, it's a Vermintide Warp Seer with a Glyph Feather Charm, two Plague Priests on Plague Furnaces, two Plague Claw Catapults, Endless Spell, Warp Lightning Vortex, and then 160 Plague Monks. That's just hilarious.
Yeah, I should point out that I think both those Skaven players, and the next one we'll talk about, are like local college students and fairly new to the hobby, so it was excessive. Cool to see them like perform so well. And maybe my information is wrong, but the event, but like it points to the power level of like two different types of Skaven lists, right? You have the Clan Pestilent, and then you have the Clan Scryer following up, and just really nice little power creep in that book. I'm gonna put it that way.
I'm wondering, was all 160 monks painted?
No, Garrett.
Okay, just wanted to know if like a college student was able to paint 160 monks before a GT.
I think it just, you know, from our audience out there, it's the stacking of buffs and like the surprise and the ability to
there are hit ways.
Really, I mean, really, really, really hard with Plague Monks just catches people off guard, and they're not a slow army either. So that combination just probably surprises people a lot. And you know, we talked about this, the Vortex, a lot already. So I don't think that needs to be covered more. But yeah, just a really hard hitting army that can take the center field or the midfield very fast. And if you can't like munch through and tank all the Plague Monks over the period of the game, that's you know, it will just whittle you down.
Yeah, that it will. You know, with the spread of players at this event, you are certainly correct. There are a lot of just Skaven players in general here, but I do like the spread, and it's interesting to see kind of a overall lack of death players there, especially Legion and Nagash. What do you think might be the reason for that, Jeremy?
Yeah, I talked to the TO about that. I was kind of curious about why, like, the spread of armies at the event. And he said in the British Columbia and the Pacific Northwest of Canada, I guess, a lot of players play Destruction here. Like, lots of players play Iron Jaw or, like, Beast Claw Raiders or just overall Destruction. And I think, you know, what you'll notice, a lot of the armies which are, like, you know, typical Destruction armies can be translated to the armies you're seeing at the event, right? There was quite a few Gloomgates players as well still, but you know, the reason why you don't see a lot of death is because you mostly have a meta of Destruction players that just are migrating to a different faction basically, and they just didn't pick death effectively is what it translates to.
Wow. Well, I mean, it definitely made me regret the decision of not going, but you know, it would have been great to fight against so many different Destruction armies.
We found the only place in the world where Destruction is a popular faction.
Right? We should have a David Attenborough talk. Right.
I'm surprised that...
Yeah, me too.
I'm surprised there was no Savage Orcs. Yeah, like, with Destruction popularity, I saw some Grand Alliance Destruction and Gloom Spites, but
like a Cunning
Ruck. Like a Cunning
Ruck.
Yeah, I mean, like, I there's old Zinch lists in here. Why not a Cunning Ruck?
Shooting.
I think Cunning Ruck could make a comeback right now with what is popular in the current meta.
Yeah, why is that?
Why is that? Yeah, because all of the kind of top tier armies right now fold to shooting, which is kind of weird that you haven't seen like a resurgence of shooting armies, because that was all the rage two and a half, 3 years ago. And it seems, I mean, other than Deepkin, all the other top armies kind of struggle with shooting.
Yeah, I feel like every single new book that comes out or like new top list, I go, Glass. And if they play Carriage and Overlords, they're destroyed. Like, I just feel like a KO list would like kill Gristlegore, or a KO list would kill Tyrants of Blood. It's just like,
well, one of the most performing Destruction army actually was a shooty list. It's just subtly shooty. It was three Thunder Tusk Huskards, I think, and maybe one Frost Lord, so two Huskard and one Frost Lord, and then like 60 Grots and 10 Iron Jaw Brutes. And you know, if you don't know what a Thunder Tusk does, it's basically six mortal wounds if it's fully, you know, functional at ranged. So it's that combo can do like 18 mortal wounds to a single target, like in one turn, right? So he probably was doing very well because he was just nuking all the supporting characters that matter to the army, like especially against like a Legion of the Gash list. If you nuke the general, they can't resummon units anymore. So and it's hard to hide against three Thunder Tusk on the table.
Yeah, that guy got, according to Best Ghost Pairing, 7th place with Grand Alliance Destruction. Nick Klaus? Klaus, yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely a...
Well, speaking of ranged armies at the event, you know, right behind him, we did have our friend Jack Ballard from Victoria's Secret and Rerolling Ones. He definitely brought a very shooty list. It was not destruction, unfortunately. It was order, and it did contain, you know, a Lord Aquilor, Lord Ordinator, Relictor, Azeros. He had his minimal unit of Liberators to fill out his battle line, but then he had 3 Castigators, 9 Vanguard Raptors, 10 2 units of 10 Skinks, and then 3 Ballistas with the Hailstorm Battery Battalion. Yeah, that's a list. I mean, Jeremy awesome. Fought that with his Night Hunt, you know, he'd kind of get the feel badsies because the range rend doesn't really matter when you ignore rend, but against a lot of those other armies, especially the destruction ones, you could just piece the armies apart.
Hey, Jack's list is subtly good at killing like anything when it comes to like characters. Like even the Vanguard Raptors do mortal wounds on 6s when they shoot, so. And they're 30 inch range if they don't move. They're pretty good at sniping at characters. I think a lot of people actually were, I was talking to some of the participants of the tournament, they didn't really want to play against Jack's list because they thought like they couldn't overcome the amount of shooting it had. And that's true for the most case. I think Jack played the 760 Plague Monk list. I don't really know what happened in the period of the game. I'm just shocked that Jack wasn't able to like basically whittle down the horde big enough, you know, long enough. But, you know, like I said, Aegis multiple times, Aegis Sigmar is an objective game. So even if you're removing models off the table, if you're not scoring points because you don't have board control, you're not going to win the game. And maybe that's what I'm Jack effectively.
Yeah, I mean, to my earlier point, probably, to be honest, the reason that you're not seeing a resurgence in shooting armies is because standing back and shooting people doesn't win you games.
Yeah.
You can table people, but it doesn't score you objectives in the middle of the table.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things that we were talking about with Reese, where it's like these shooting lists to a lot of players, they just don't want to play against it because it's a very one-sided experience, but it doesn't win games because you can't reach out and go play the actual objective mission. But it does create a negative play experience to a lot of players, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
The game needs good shooting units, but the game doesn't need good shooting armies, because basically it comes down to. Should we talk a little bit about the Scryer list, which was an all shooting list that can actually fight in middle objectives?
Yeah, let's take a closer look into it. This was the list that gave you the bad touch, correct?
No, it was, but it's just one model gave you the bad touch, but. That stone was suspicious.
Yeah, for our listeners out there, it was the treacherous warp maw. Is that correct, Jeremy?
Treacherous warp maw.
Relic? It's just the vermin warp seer with the suspicious stone relic.
Okay.
What is the treacherous warp maw?
Oh, I just see the title of the list.
Oh, yeah. I guess, sorry. I didn't look. I don't bother to look at fluff.
Show us on the Warhammer model where he touched.
The warp maw.
He touched me in my Eidolon aspect of the sea place, where I wish it was just as good as that model.
Well, tell us a little bit about his list, and then maybe how that game.
Well, no, I think I already mentioned that earlier, but I want to point on like Clan Scryer is one of the few, like when we talked about good shooting units. Kling Squires has like two really good shooting units, and one is effectively good at taking like objectives, which is Storm Fiends, because they can participate in all phases of the game except for obviously magic. You know, their shooting is pretty good, and their melee is not terrible. It can hit like a truck. Don't get me wrong. It's just that it's not designed to be just solely like one way or the other. I think it's better designed as a shooting unit that just happens to have some decent melee. So you can track it down the field. It's durable enough with 6 wounds a model with 4 up save, and one model every 3 that has 7 wounds. So you can basically go fight things and still shoot them and still be functional for both phases of the game, and move all the Scryer buffs they can do to that specific unit of Storm Fiends. It's just a really good unit to have. I don't think my opponent had too much Storm Fiends, in my opinion, but like it's just 1 unit of 6 just does work, right? It's expensive, but it does work. And then his list also included 2 Warp Lightning Cannons, which I have a newfound respect for, because they sniped like 2 of my characters in like 1 turn. If an audience is listening out there, please always supercharge your Warp Lightning and just shoot at supporting characters that buff your opponent's army. It doesn't matter if they die in the process. If they kill it, like they did their work. It doesn't matter if it's a negative point exchange. It's just that they're so good at removing strategic characters out of the table, especially against like any kind of Legion army. Like 2 of those could literally just remove the general on like turn 1. It doesn't matter if it has Ethereal Amulet. It doesn't matter if it has a Death Truck save, 24 dice that could possibly do a mortal wound, 24 mortal wounds that consistent, you know, not consistently, but at least like has a good chance of doing that, is pretty good, pretty pretty good.
Taking a look at his list too, you got to give mad respect for this guy, because his Warp Lightning Cannons are actually named on his list as shock and awe. Yeah,
he takes a lot of creative pride in his little army. So it was unfortunately not fully painted, which sucked, but the models that were painted very well.
How did the Doom Wheel perform? I've heard success from people online, but I've never been able to actually see anybody use it.
So I'll tell you the short and glorious story of the Doom Wheel in our game. It supercharged itself, rolled a double, and then exploded to 10 mortal wounds. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds thematic. I like the thematic.
He did tell me like he loves it. It's been doing great for him. It's one of the few games where it just did terrible for him. You know, but when you play Scryer, get ready for like wacky like things that happen, I guess.
So, oh boy. Okay.
Which I'm glad that they do that, because a lot of people are really attracted to Scryer because of the crazy, you know, random high damage, high risk, high reward power of them. So the fact that it does play out that way, I mean, as you're saying with Warp Lightning Cannons, like why would you never supercharge them? Because yeah, the model might explode and die, but it'll just murder stuff. So it's really nice to see that.
I wish it was not as point and clicky. Is kind of my only feedback out of that army. But I feel like, you know, that's maybe a personal. I'm not a big fan of like mostly shooting armies. I think there should be good shooting units in the meta, but I'm not a fan of just purely shooting armies. And that army feels very point and click, which is basically, did I get my more warp power off on my 6 Storm Fiends? And did I spend a Warp Spark on that Storm Field unit? And did I just remove an entire unit off the table? Yeah. that's just like the decision-making process of that list, basically.
Did it even like take out large blocks of Ignore Rend, Grim Ghast and stuff when they do more and more power on a Warp Storm token on the Storm
Fiends? Yeah, he did. But, you know, I lost a lot of them to Warp Flame Projectors, because he does smaller units of Storm Fiends as Warp Flame Projectors. But, you know, even you don't even need the Warp Flame Projector, honestly, because 2 damage, you know, 66 shots hitting on 4s, winning on 3s of all rerolls will just do just fine. It's fine.
It'll do enough. Wow. Well, you know, it seems like it was a really fun event, and it was a very unique event as well. So, you know, it's great to see it happen again this year. And was there anything else that happened in particular during Wet Coast that was just kind of out of this world for you?
Yeah, I I'm always really, you know, for me personally, I think it's cool when I see more women in the hobby. And there was three women participating in the event, which I think for me was a record for AOS. And in fact, some of them played each other with two wonderfully painted army. One was Daughters of Cain and the other was Sylvaneth. One had Morathi and the other had Ilario. And it was cool. They were played right next to me. It was cool watching their game unfold. I just I'm glad to see like the gender gap is closing in Age of Sigmar. Progressiveness.
Okay, now we're going to begin having a bit of a discussion related to the brand new Battle Tome that just got released. The Fire Slayers Battle Tome just came out. And our resident Fire Slayer expert, Jeremy, does have quite a bit to say about it. Now, we do have one other footnote here. Matthew has some parental duties to attend to, so he's going to be dropping off the remainder of this episode. But Jeremy, we do have that Fire Slayer book, and without going through the entirety of the Battle Tome, what are some of the big winners that you see in this new revision of the Battle Tome?
I think the biggest winner is everybody who spent like, you know, $800 on basically 90 models, and then realizing that their entire Volkite collection is meaningless. It's just the biggest winner in the armies are basically the Urfgard Berserkers. If you don't know what they are, they're basically a unit of elite Dwarden, Fire Slayer Dwardens, which are basically take oaths before the battle, and they have a 6-up shrug that gets improved to 4-up shrug as long as there's a unit friendly Fire Slayer hero within 10 inches. Probably going to get fact to all even 10, but it doesn't really matter because the army functions, you know, pretty much always wholly in range for everything else. But they haven't done change except for it haven't not cha- that hasn't changed from the previous edition. What has changed is that they got an extra wound, so basically 100% durability improvement, and they got 2-inch reach, which meant that now, like, the biggest problem I've had of the those units, which has been, you know, my biggest gripe, as you know, Alex, because I've bitched to you about it 100 million times, is all I wanted in this book was 2-inch reach Hearthguard Berserkers, and I got 2-inch reach Hearthguard Berserkers. I got an extra wound out of it, and only that, the pole arms, which was one of the weapon options they got, basically became more consistent and also, you know, better in a way. Because the last improvement they did to that unit is they gave them an extra attack. So not only did they give them an extra attack, they gave them an extra inch range, they gave them an extra wound, they kept all their durability bonus, and they only went up by 20 points. I was just like, I don't really know, like, what Games Workshop was.
Yeah, what is Blizzard trying to say about that?
Jeff Kaplan, come on, make a comment about it. I don't know what the Games Workshop was thinking when they wrote those rules and only priced at 120 for the 5-man unit. They should have been 140. And for some reason, to double notch it, they kept them with a discount. I think they're going to be everywhere.
I mean, even at 100 points, when there were only one wound, you still saw them a bunch. They were still a staple unit of competitive Fire Slayer lists. So the fact that they doubled in durability, doubled in damage output, doubled the range of their things, and they went up 20 points. They went up, 4 points a model, is just insane.
Yeah, that's great. 4 points for basically two models comparative to last time. Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
It's not fantastic. It's just broken.
It's insane.
So I'll give you an example for the audience. Like, I've played some, you know, playtest games with that unit, and I just basically, like, Lightning Vortex from Skaven, don't care. Can't run, I'll just tank it and just go forward. Like, that's how tough that unit, that even a 10-man unit of that is. They just don't care about most things. Like, you know, unless you're going to nerf their ability to hit hard, which you can, and that's what you should be doing, they just don't care about most damage output. They're slow, to an extent. We'll talk, Garrett, I can't wait until you tell us about why they're not slow. But for the most part... They're just a unit that's just like a rock, and people are gonna come at it like a bunch of waves on some Scottish hills or some Irish ales, and it's just going to hit that, erode a little bit of the rock, and then nothing's going to happen. And everybody's going to be sad because they're like, how did my most elite Terrorgeist on, you know, Savage Strike Gristlegore General kill two models? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, like, those things do, what, like, 30 damage on average. You're going to have that with your 4-up shrug down to 15, and then they got two wounds apiece, so you're going to kill 7 of the 30 dudes.
And that's assuming they have all the Terrorgeist. On average, it's, what, like, 12 mortal wounds, which goes down to 6 mortal wounds, which will kill 3 guys, and then their buffable saves, or reroll 1 saves, depending on how we... I honestly don't understand what they were thinking.
That is hilarious.
What do you think about Volkites, which were the good old staple of Fire Slayers?
I really like the new Volkite rules. I think they fixed Volkite Berserkers as, you know, the de facto battle line choice. Instead of giving them a 4-up shrug, they gave them the durability that they wanted, was reduce all damage by 50%. By giving them an extra wound. So they're now 2 wounds, but I think they just overdid it, and they made them, they used to be 120 for 10, and that was super cheap for being able to just shrug off half the damage. And now they're 160 for 10, and it's just like their damage output didn't really go up.
Got an extra attack. They got 2.
Feel very.
They were always
2. Yeah, they got damage increase. They got the ability to attack when they die once per game. Force.
So they got that.
Okay.
Yeah, I was happy to see that all the some of the range things take a bit of a hit. I mean, all the throwing axes now hit on 5s and wound on 5s, right? Or wound on 4s?
No, they wound on 5s. Yeah, the fire still axe became fives. A cosmetic like thing. It didn't really it changed from like relevancy to irrelevancy in a way. But it is cool to, like, you know, in case you just have like 1 or 2 units, you know, models left in the, you know, switch somewhat squishy unit blocking them from making a charge. So it's nice. But like, let's talk about some of the lodges, specifically, Garrett, what is your take on some of the lodge option, aka Fire Slayer sub-factions?
Well, I think all of the lodges have merits. They all have their own bonuses. Like, Vostarge is pretty command point efficient, and it's got a really nice, I think they all have pretty decent relics, which is nice to see, because I feel like a lot of the times you're taking, like, Gristlegore's relic is awful, but you take it for everything else. Greyfeared is nice because you get extra relics, so when you for non-caster armies, the extra relics are really nice for Place of Arcane Power. But I think when you're looking at going Hearthguard Berserker heavy, Hermdar is probably the best combined with Lords of the Lodge. So because Lords of the Lodge is a great battalion that allows you to swing twice with the unit of Hearthguard Berserkers, as long as they're near with the heroes, you're probably going to want to go full in on a big unit of Hearthguard Berserkers. So the ability to, it makes you immune to battle shock if you're in the enemy territory or within near an objective. So you're saving a command point. Then it has a fantastic command ability. Always strike first for a unit of Hearthguard Berserkers or Volkite Berserkers. So this is the Fire Slayer's version of always strike first, and it affects your Hearthguard Berserkers, which are your most powerful unit in the book anyways. And so that is how you're going to get your always strike first mechanic. Then its command trait is phenomenal. It's a 12-inch bubble of units in range. Attacks against them are -1 to wound. So it's just adding on to an already incredibly tough unit. So you have your holy within 10 inches for your 4-up shrug. Your holy within 12 inches for your -1 to wound. You're holy within 12 inches so you can pile an attack twice. As long as you're in range of your general, holy within 12 inches, that Hearthguard Berserker unit is super tough. And then there's other heroes that are going to be giving bonuses to save. So as you were saying earlier, Jeremy, the stacking on all of these buffs onto a Hearthguard Berserker unit is going to make them super, super powerful. And when you were talking about speed earlier, this I'm very reminiscent of Nurgle. So like dwarves are supposed to be slow, just like Nurgle was. But then they gave them run and charge, which there is a prayer that just gives you run and charge. All of a sudden, you can just go 6-inch free run with a command point. You're going 10 inches down the board and you can still charge. Dwarves aren't very slow anymore. So it's, yeah, I would definitely say Harmdar is probably the clear winner, just like Gristlegor or, arguably, Bloodlords from Khorne because of the always strike first mechanic. Alex, what are your thoughts around that? Being able to fix
their speed issue is going to be huge, especially since the runes are still going to be in place too. Is that correct?
Yeah, but they nerfed the speed rune. It's only 2 inches to move and 2 inches to charge if you get the enhance effect.
Yeah.
I don't.
Oh no, but you can run and charge now, so it's just like 4 inches.
For the record, it's not every unit can run and charge with that command.
Yeah.
It's just one unit, right? You can't.
It's not even a command ability, it's a priest.
It's a prayer.
So
just one.
If it was a command ability, it's a prayer. It'd be even more nutty.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think. You should talk about the prayers of it. They're so insane. I know
that that's a prayer, not a command ability, compared to other prayers. But just looking at some of the command abilities that these heroes do have is super useful. I mean, it's total. It's going to be interesting to see how Fire Slayers interact with the new Slaanesh book, since they, you know, they do have that spell that'll be able to shut down command ability.
Actually, let's ask that to the resident rules expert here, which is Garrett. How does and a command ability that gives you always strike at the combat phase work in the, since they loaded that fact about explaining how things trigger.
So yeah, actually it is very interesting that they made their always strike first a command ability that is used at the start of the charge phase. So a lot of the always strike first abilities are always on, and due to the Wildfire Taurus FAQ, they made sure that if two abilities are conflicting, the one that was applied second takes precedent. So since this ability is applied at the start of the combat phase, a lot of those abilities like Soul Cage from Nighthaunt or the Wildfire Taurus, which make you strike last, this one would be applied second and supersede that, making it always strike first, even if you had an always strike last ability.
No, I didn't think that there was a question with that. What I mean to say is there's a spell for Slaanesh that points out a character and says that character until the start of their next, until the start of, you know, my next hero phase can't use command abilities.
Yeah, no, that's definitely going to shut down a lot the of the benefits.
They can only cast a spell once.
Fire Slayers and
stuff. True. For the audience, I just want to point it out to Alex. Like, this is a lodge mechanic, which means that any hero and use that command ability. So even if you zap one hero, say like you can't use that command ability, they're like the other hero that's nearby giving them buffs. It's going to be like, cool, you got it.
that's just fantastic.
It's for me, it's like I want Garrett to like explain this for folks on the audience, because they'll think like, oh, I'm going to soul cage that unit so it can't strike last. But the thing is, yeah, exactly.
But that's not how it works.
And that it's going to be really frustrating for folks when they find out, like, your soul cage didn't actually soul cage. And it's just going to be really sad. So.
Yeah, because, I mean, everyone's been talking about how soul cage and Wildfire Taurus are answers to always strike first because of this same rule where the soul cage and Wildfire Taurus would supersede the other always strike first mechanics because it was applied second. But this one's actually applied later. Although, interestingly, because it's used at the start of the combat phase, if there are other abilities that trigger at the start of the combat phase and it's your opponent's turn, they'll be able to use them before you even get a choice to decide to use this. So, I mean, I guess you get to save your command point on the turn when it's your opponent's turn, because you're like, well, he's always striking first in his turn anyway, so I'm just not going to use it. It's going
to be a weird, like, feel like we're playing Magic the Gathering about, like, the stack and how the stack resolves now. We're getting to that point.
We very much are. And I actually think that it's kind of interesting because, you know, it is fun to see both in, you know, Age of Sigmar and other, in other games like 40K, where something becomes the norm and it becomes like the hot new thing that different armies have. Like the beginning of 8th edition 40K, you know, the hot new thing was to have a bunch of sub-factions that were -1 to hit. And, you know, in AOS right now, it seems like things are, you know, the hot new thing is to have a lot of mechanics that strike first, you know, with Eidoneth, with Fire Slayers now. It's just something that seems common to me.
And Slaanesh.
And Slaanesh and Flesh Eater Quartz.
Well, Slaanesh does the always strike last. Yeah, it definitely, it's weird because as a Legion of Nagash player with what, I mean, we got 5 to 6 new books in 5 months. So obviously they're moving quickly, but like, geez, the Legions of Nagash book feels, I think it's at least 5 new books in 5 months.
Yeah, we got about that. Yeah, I was getting this. We got Skaventide. We got Flesh Eater Court. We got Gloomgeist Bits. We got Fire Slayers. And we got Hedonites of Slaanesh coming
out. And Khorne.
And Khorne. Yeah. So it with, but Legions of Nagash, like, he was, you know, the all, like, there, he, there was one of the best books. It's now feeling super lackluster with not very impressive rules. It feels behind the curve a bunch because it's all these always strike first mechanics. And you're just,
yeah,
like,
but you can use geez, that, like, tactical generalmanship. I don't have the tools. Spending a command point to recycle.
Tactical? Are we really going tactical now? We're not going tactical?
No, we're going tactical. Tactical.
Let me get John McCool on this.
It's pretty tactical to recycle an entire unit.
Yeah, for one command point.
Yeah. Hey, it doesn't seem broken in any way, especially with, oh, I can just spend one command point to make 30 Grim Hearthguard Berserkers strike first.
I want to remind that Nidhoggs still have the always strike first, above strike first mechanic. And Flesh Eater Court still have the Savage Strike, you know, double activation, like, general. So, like, death is fine. Legion of Nagash, though, feels like it's still going to be basically a game of, like, whittling down
things. Yeah, Legion specifically. Yeah, like, throwing sacrificial units to die and then revive and just trying to win the war of attrition, hopefully.
I just think that in the meta where, like, Skaventide is becoming more relevant, Legion of Nagash is going to take a hit because, like, anytime you're facing, like, you know, like, Clan Scryer and your general is, like, Arkhan, you're like, good night, sweet prince. You're never seeing the table past turn two.
So, you know, with the lists that are coming out, it sounds like, Jeremy, your list is primarily going to be based around heroes and the big unit of Hearthguard. I've seen a little bit of chatter on the internet recently about people wanting to do a little bit more of a monster mash, kind of a Flesh Eater Quartz equivalent of the Terrorgeist list, but for Fire Slayers, with just, you know, 5 or 6 Magma Droths. What do you think about that kind of list? You know, there's definitely some mortal wound output, especially with some of the changes that the Magma Droth War Scrolls are receiving. But yeah, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think so. Specifically, it's called Lodge Lofnir, which if you're in a pitch battle game, if all your heroes are basically Magma Droths, you can take an extra Magma Droth as a hero, which basically allows you to have 5 Magma Droths. The Lofnir Lodge actually works more synergically with Magma Droth and Auric Earth Guards, which are the basically shooting Earth Guard models that the Firestarters get. Because the command ability is a +1 to hit and +1 to wound for against one unit with those magma pikes that they carry. So it doesn't even have to be a big unit of Auric Earth Guard. It's just, you know, you can have MSU Auric Earth Guards and they all get the bonus as long as they shoot at the same, you know, enemy unit. But the thing about Magma Droth is that, yeah, they give them an extra 2 wounds. But, you know, for the audience out here, it's like right now, like the way they worded the Roaring Fire Stream, they nerfed it from the last edition to basically mean that if you are down to like the bottom bracket, unless they fact this, you're rolling 3d6 and you're trying to beat the model count to do mortal wounds, which used to be where you 3d you roll 3 dice and you would compare each dice to the number of to the model count of the unit. So this, I don't know if it's an oversight or if they just chose to change it where Magma Droths don't do that anymore. I think a lot of people were banking on that mortal wound output mechanic when they saw Lofnir, and now they might want to really reread the rule. I'll follow it up with, like, even if the rule gets fixed, five magma draw, isn't that scary on the table for basically anyone? Like, no, they can. Hard. But the thing is, like, the requirement of them making hit hard is too. It's a relic investment. It's command point advancement, and it's also like basically, you know, people are going to be loading for Bear, aka Grisogore, and you know they're going to see five magma drop across the table. They're like, great, these are just, you know, half as effective, twice as many, and also like, you know, weaker. So,
I mean, the one general can kill two a turn.
I don't know why people are excited about the five. I mean, it looks cool on the table. Don't get me wrong. Like, you bring like five magma draw, you're like, cool. And then you're like, it's like the same thing Beast Claw Raiders suffer from. It's like, except Beast Claw Raiders are still a better like army composition than magma draw, because at least the Thunder Tusks do like an automatic six mortal wounds.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's
where you need to roll more two consistent plus, than
the bloody magma drop one. It's just it's D3 and D3, 12, yeah, and you roll underneath that. I just don't understand really why they decided to, like, Lofnir's cool. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, you could make a competitive Lofnir list, but you shouldn't be taking five magma drop on a competitive Lofnir list.
Yeah. Okay, so the consensus is in, and the French Overlord doesn't necessarily think that five magma droths are going to be the best competitive option out there. But
it's the coolest. It's the coolest.
Yeah, it would be fun, especially when you do fight against another monster mash list. But you know, a good shooting army, like we talked about a little earlier, and your Fire Slayer army will kind of laugh it off at the table.
I don't know. Like, actually, I was thinking about this in a mirror match scenario. If I face a Lofnir player with basically 30 Uruk Earth cards, he can basically snipe off maybe like an average two characters off the table when they come down with the whole magma tunneling mechanic. So the thing is, for everybody who's listening, the way to counter Fire Slayers, especially Uruk Earth cards on all the Berserkers, is just nuke the heroes. And if you got shooting that lets you nuke heroes, bloody do it.
And if not, womp womp. Yeah.
The age of shooting has come again.
There you go. Make
Skyfire spam.
Okay. I can? Question mark. We're going to see your Fire Slayers on the table pretty soon. In just a couple of weeks in Bremerton, Washington, the Victoria's Secret guys are going to be hosting the Riptide GT on May 4th and 5th in Bremerton, Washington, just across from Seattle. And you're definitely going to be there, right, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm going to be there with nothing but Berserkers and heroes.
Nothing but Berserkers. Okay. I myself am also going to be there, as well as our co-host Matthew. John and Garrett are not going to be able to make it, right? You can't make a last-minute flight to the opposite side of the country. Right, Garrett?
No, I cannot. I actually have quite a busy tournament schedule planned for this summer. So once June kicks off, I will probably be going to quite a few events. Well, then
we hope to see you soon. We also do want to give a shout out to the T-Shift GT for both 40K and AOS on August 4th and 5th of this year. And then, we are also going to be having BAO just next month too, a few weeks after Riptide, on the 25th and the 26th of May. So if you can't make it up to Bremerton, Washington, try to make it to the Bay Area just a couple of weeks later.
And if I can as well, out here on the East Coast, there is a fantastic tournament that I've heard about and I'm excited to go to for the first time. It's the Triumph GT, hosted by Mythicos Studios, a store up in North Jersey, I believe. And that is the weekend of June 7th, 8th, and 9th. They have many kinds of events, 40K, Age of Sigmar, I think Kings of War, Blood Bowl. But they have an exciting Age of Sigmar
tournament. Right on. Good luck. Good luck. So hope to see all of our listeners there. And for our listeners, be sure to rate us on Apple Podcast, follow us on Podbean or wherever you get your podcasts. Feel free to leave a review or a recommendation on Facebook as well. And we hope to hear from you next time. Be sure to download the 40K and the X-Wing episodes of the Wide World of Wargaming as well. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.